For I know as a fact that Mitty only last week, when he was with some gypsy girls drunk in a tavern, cried out aloud that he was unworthy of his betrothed, Katia, but that his brother Ivan, he was the man who deserved her. And Katerina Ivanovna will not in the end refuse such a fascinating man as Ivan? She's hesitating between the two of them already. And how has that Ivan won you all, so that you all worship him? He is laughing at you, and enjoying himself at your expense. How do you know? How can you speak so confidently? Alishor asked sharply, frowning. Why do you ask, and are frightened at my answer? It shows that you know I'm speaking the truth. You don't like Ivan. Ivan wouldn't be tempted by money. Really? And the beauty of Katerina Ivanovna? It's not only the money, though a fortune of 60,000 is an attraction. Ivan is above that. He wouldn't make up to anyone for thousands. It is not money, it's not comfort Ivan is seeking. Perhaps it's suffering he is seeking. What wild dream now. Oh, you aristocrats. Ah, Mizha. He has a stormy spirit. His mind is in bondage. He is haunted by a great, unsolved doubt. He is one of those who don't want millions, but an answer to their questions. That's plagiarism, Alishor. You're quoting your elders' phrases. Ah, Ivan has set you a problem. Cried Rakitin, with undisguised malice. His face changed, and his lips twitched. And the problem's a stupid one. It is no good guessing it. Rack your brains, you'll understand it. His article is absurd and ridiculous. And did you hear his stupid theory just now? If there's no immortality of the soul, then there's no virtue, and everything is lawful. And by the way, do you remember how your brother Mitya cried out, I will remember, unattractive theory for scoundrels, I'm being abusive, that's stupid, not for scoundrels, but for pedantic posers, haunted by profound, unsolved doubts. He's showing off, and what it all comes to is, on the one hand we cannot but admit and on the other it must be confessed. His whole theory is a fraud. Humanity will find in itself the power to live for virtue even without believing in immortality. It will find it in love for freedom, for equality, for fraternity. Rakitin could hardly restrain himself in his heat, but, suddenly, as though remembering something, he stopped short. Well, that's enough, he said, with a still more crooked smile. Why are you laughing? Do you think I'm a vulgar fool? No, I never dreamed of thinking you a vulgar fool. You are clever but... Never mind, I was silly to smile. I understand you're getting hot about it, Mizha. I guess from your warmth that you are not indifferent to Katerina Ivanovna yourself. I've suspected that for a long time, brother, that's why you don't like my brother Ivan. Are you jealous of him? And jealous of her money, too? Won't you add that? I'll say nothing about money. I am not going to insult you. I believe it, since you say so, but confound you, and your brother Ivan with you. Don't you understand that one might very well dislike him, apart from Katerina Ivanovna? And why the devil should I like him? He condescends to abuse me, you know. Why haven't I a right to abuse him? I never heard of his saying anything about you, good or bad. He doesn't speak of you at all. But I heard that the day before yesterday at Katerina Ivanovna's he was abusing me for all he was worth. You see what an interest he takes in your humble servant. And which is the jealous one after that, brother, I can't say. He was so good as to express the opinion that, if I don't go in for the career of an archimandrite in the immediate future and don't become a monk, I shall be sure to go to Petersburg and get on to some solid magazine as a reviewer, that I shall write for the next 10 years, and in the end become the owner of the magazine, and bring it out on the liberal and atheistic side, with a socialistic tinge, with a tiny gloss of socialism, but keeping a sharp lookout all the time, that is, keeping in with both sides and hoodwinking the fools. According to your brother's account, The tinge of socialism won't hinder me from laying by the proceeds and investing them under the guidance of some Jew, till at the end of my career I build a great house in Petersburg and move my publishing offices to it, and let out the upper stories to lodgers. He has even chosen the place for it, near the new stone bridge across the Neva, which they say is to be built in Petersburg. Ah, Mizha, that's just what will really happen, every word of it, cried Alishaw, unable to restrain a good, humored smile. You are pleased to be sarcastic, too, Alexei Fyodorovich. No, I'm joking, forgive me. I've something quite different in my mind. But, excuse me, who can have told you all this? You can't have been at Katerina Ivanovna's yourself when he was talking about you. I wasn't there, but Dmitri Fyodorovich was, and I heard him tell it with my own ears. If you want to know, he didn't tell me, but I overheard him, unintentionally, of course, for I was sitting in Grushenka's bedroom and I couldn't go away because Dmitri Fyodorovich was in the next room. Oh yes, I'd forgotten she was a relation of yours. A relation. That Grushenka a relation of mine. Cried Rakitin, turning crimson. Are you mad? You're out of your mind. Why, isn't she a relation of yours? I heard so. Where can you have heard it? You Karamazovs brag of being an ancient, noble family, though your father used to run about playing the buffoon at other men's tables, and was only admitted to the kitchen as a favor. I may be only a priest's son, and dirt in the eyes of noblemen like you, but don't insult me so lightly and wantonly. I have a sense of honor, too, Alexei Fyodorovich. I couldn't be a relation of Grushenka, a common harlot. I beg you to understand that. Rakitin was intensely irritated. Forgive me, for goodness sake, I had no idea. Besides, how can you call her a harlot? Is she that sort of woman? Alishaw flushed suddenly. I tell you again, I heard that she was a relation of yours. You often go to see her, and you told me yourself you're not her lover. I never dreamed that you of all people had such contempt for her. Does she really deserve it? I may have reasons of my own for visiting her. That's not your business. But as for relationship, your brother, or even your father, is more likely to make her yours than mine. Well, here we are. You'd better go to the kitchen. Hello. What's wrong? What is it? Are we late? They can't have finished dinner so soon. Have the Karamazovs been making trouble again? No doubt they have. Here's your father and your brother Ivan after him. They've broken out from the father superiors. And look, Father Isidore's shouting out something after them from the steps. And your father's shouting and waving his arms. I expect he's swearing. Bah, and there goes Musov driving away in his carriage. You see, he's going. And there's old Maximov running, there must have been a row. There can't have been any dinner. Surely they've not been beating the father superior. Or have they, perhaps, been beaten? It would serve them right. There was reason for Rakitin's exclamations. There had been a scandalous, an unprecedented scene. It had all come from the impulse of a moment. Chapter 8, The Scandalous Scene. Musov, as a man of breeding and delicacy, could not but feel some inward qualms. When he reached the father superior's with Ivan, he felt ashamed of having lost his temper. He felt that he ought to have disdained that despicable wretch, Fyodor Pavlovich, too much to have been upset by him in Father Zosima's cell, and so to have forgotten himself. The monks were not to blame, in any case, he reflected, on the steps. And if they're decent people here, and the father superior, I understand, is a nobleman, why not be friendly and courteous with them? I won't argue, I'll fall in with everything, I'll win them by politeness, and show them that I've nothing to do with that Aesop, that buffoon, that Pierrot, and have merely been taken in over this affair, just as they have. He determined to drop his litigation with the and fishery rights at once. He was the more ready to do this because the rights had become much less valuable, and he had indeed the vaguest idea where the wood and river in question were. These excellent intentions were strengthened when he entered the Father Superior's dining room, though, strictly speaking, it was not a dining room, for the Father Superior had only two rooms altogether. They were, however, much larger and more comfortable than Father Zosima's. But there was no great luxury about the furnishing of these rooms either. The furniture was of mahogany, covered with leather, in the old-fashioned style of 1820. The floor was not even stained, but everything was shining with cleanliness, and there were many choice flowers in the windows. The most sumptuous thing in the room at the moment was, of course, the beautifully decorated table. The cloth was clean, the service shone, there were three kinds of well-baked bread, two bottles of wine, two of excellent mead, and a large glass jug of kvass, both the latter made in the monastery, and famous in the neighborhood. There was no vodka. Rakitin related afterwards that there were five dishes: fish, soup made of sterlets, served with little fish patties, then boiled fish served in a special way, then salmon cutlets, ice pudding and compote, and finally, blanc mange. Rakitin found out about all these good things, for he could not resist peeping into the kitchen, where he already had a footing. He had a footing everywhere, and got information about everything. He was of an uneasy and envious temper. He was well aware of his own considerable abilities, and nervously exaggerated them in his self-conceit. He knew he would play a prominent part of some sort, but Alishaw, who was attached to him, was distressed to see that his friend Rakitin was dishonorable, and quite unconscious of being so himself, considering, on the contrary, that because he would not steal money left on the table he was a man of the highest integrity. Neither Alishaw nor anyone else could have influenced him in that. Rakitin, of course, was a person of too little consequence to be invited to the dinner, to which Father Iosif, Father Pacey, and one other monk were the only inmates of the monastery invited. They were already waiting when Musov, Kalganov, and Ivan arrived. The other guest, Maximov, stood a little aside, waiting also. The Father Superior stepped into the middle of the room to receive his guests. He was a tall, thin, but still vigorous old man, with black hair streaked with grey, and a long, grave, ascetic face. He bowed to his guests in silence. But this time they approached to receive his blessing. Musov even tried to kiss his hand, but the Father Superior drew it back in time to avoid the salute. But Ivan and Kalganov went through the ceremony in the most simple, hearted and complete manner, kissing his hand as peasants do. "We must apologize most humbly, Your Reverence," began Musov, simpering affably, and speaking in a dignified and respectful tone. "Pardon us for having come alone without the gentleman you invited, Fyodor Pavlovich. He felt obliged to decline the honor of your hospitality, and not without reason. In the Reverend Father Zosima's cell he was carried away by the unhappy dissension with his son, and let fall words which were quite out of keeping. In fact, quite unseemly." As he glanced at the monks, "Your Reverence is, no doubt, already aware." And therefore, recognizing that he had been to blame, he felt sincere regret and shame, and begged me, and his son Ivan Fyodorovich, to convey to you his apologies and regrets. In brief, he hopes and desires to make amends later. He asks your blessing, and begs you to forget what has taken place." As he uttered the last word of his tirade, Musov completely recovered his self-complacency, and all traces of his former irritation disappeared. He fully and sincerely loved humanity again. The Father Superior listened to him with dignity, and, with a slight bend of the head, replied, "I sincerely deplore his absence. Perhaps at our table he might have learnt to like us, and we him. Pray be seated, gentlemen." He stood before the holy image, and began to say grace, the loud. All bent their heads reverently, and Maximov clasped his hands before him, with peculiar fervor. It was at this moment that Fyodor Pavlovich played his last prank. It must be noted that he really had meant to go home, and really had felt the impossibility of going to dine with the Father Superior as though nothing had happened, after his disgraceful behavior in the elder's cell. Not that he was so very much ashamed of himself, quite the contrary perhaps. But still he felt it would be unseemly to go to dinner. Yet his creaking carriage had hardly been brought to the steps of the hotel, and he had hardly got into it, when he suddenly stopped short. He remembered his own words at the elder's, "I always feel when I meet people that I am lower than all, and that they all take me for a buffoon, so I say let me play the buffoon, for you are, every one of you, stupider and lower than I." He longed to revenge himself on everyone for his own unseemliness. He suddenly recalled how he had once in the past been asked, "Why do you hate so-and-so, so much?" And he had answered them, with his shameless impudence, "I'll tell you. He has done me no harm. But I played him a dirty trick, and ever since I have hated him." Remembering that now, he smiled quietly and malignantly, hesitating for a moment. His eyes gleamed, and his lips positively quivered. "Well, since I have begun, I may as well go on," he decided. His predominant sensation at that moment might be expressed in the following words: "Well, there is no rehabilitating myself now. So let me shame them for all I am worth. I will show them I don't care what they think, that's all." He told the coachman to wait, while with rapid steps he returned to their monastery and straight to the Father Superior's. He had no clear idea what he would do, but he knew that he could not control himself, and that a touch might drive him to the utmost limits of obscenity, but only to obscenity, to nothing criminal, nothing for which he could be legally punished. In the last resort, he could always restrain himself, and had marveled indeed at himself, on that score, sometimes. He appeared in the Father Superior's dining room, at the moment when the prayer was over, and all were moving to the table. Standing in the doorway, he scanned the company, and laughing his prolonged, impudent, malicious chuckle, looked them all boldly in the face. "They thought I had gone, and here I am again," he cried to the whole room. For one moment everyone stared at him without a word, and at once everyone felt that something revolting, grotesque, positively scandalous, was about to happen. Musoff passed immediately from the most benevolent frame of mind to the most savage. All the feelings that had subsided and died down in his heart revived instantly. "No. This I cannot endure," he cried. "I absolutely cannot. And I certainly cannot." The blood rushed to his head. He positively stammered, but he was beyond thinking of style, and he seized his hat. "What is it he cannot?" cried Fyodor Pavlovich, "that he absolutely cannot and certainly cannot? Your reverence, am I to come in or not? Will you receive me as your guest?" "You are welcome with all my heart," answered the superior. "Gentlemen," he added, "I venture to beg you most earnestly to lay aside your dissensions, and to be united in love and family harmony, with prayer to the Lord at our humble table." "No, no, it is impossible," cried Musoff, beside himself. "Well, if it is impossible for Pyotr Alexandrovich, it is impossible for me, and I won't stop. That is why I came. I will keep with Pyotr Alexandrovich everywhere now. If you will go away, Pyotr Alexandrovich, I will go away too. If you remain, I will remain." "You stung him by what you said about family harmony, Father Superior. He does not admit he is my relation." "That's right, isn't it, von Sonn? Here's von Sonn. How are you, von Sonn?"
"Do you mean me?"
muttered Maximov, puzzled.
"Of course I mean you," cried Fyodor Pavlovich. "Who else?"
The Father Superior could not be von Sonn. "But I am not von Sonn either. I am Maximov."
"No, you are von Sonn.
Your reverence, do you know who von Sonn was? It was a famous murder case. He was killed in a house of harlotry. I believe that is what such places are called among you. He was killed and robbed, and in spite of his venerable age, he was nailed up in a box and sent from Petersburg to Moscow in the luggage van, and while they were nailing him up, The harlots sang songs and played the harp, that is to say, the piano. So this is that very Von Solin. He has risen from the dead, hasn't he, Von Solin? What is happening? What's this? Voices were heard in the group of monks. Let us go, cried Musov, addressing Kalganov. No, excuse me, Fyodor Pavlovich broke in shrilly, taking another step into the room. Allow me to finish. There in the cell you blamed me for behaving disrespectfully just because I spoke of eating gudgeon, Pyotr Alexandrovich. Musov, my relation, prefers to have plus de noblesse que de sincerite in his words, but I prefer in mine plus de sincerite que de noblesse, and, damn the noblesse. That's right, isn't it, Von Solin? Allow me, Father Superior, though I am a buffoon and play the buffoon, yet I am the soul of honor, and I want to speak my mind. Yes, I am the soul of honor, while in Pyotr Alexandrovich there is wounded vanity and nothing else. I came here perhaps to have a look and speak my mind. My son, Alexei, is here, being saved. I am his father, I care for his welfare, and it is my duty to care. While I've been playing the fool, I have been listening and having a look on the sly, and now am I want to give you the last act of the performance. You know how things are with us? As a thing falls, so it lies. As a thing once has fallen, so it must lie forever. Not a bit of it. I want to get up again. Holy Father, I am indignant with you. Confession is a great sacrament, before which I am ready to bow down reverently, but there in the cell, they all kneel down and confess aloud. Can it be right to confess aloud? It was ordained by the Holy Fathers to confess in secret, then only your confession will be a mystery, and so it was of old. But how can I explain to him before everyone that I did this and that? Well, you understand what, sometimes it would not be proper to talk about it, so it is really a scandal. No, fathers, one might be carried along with you to the flagellants, I dare say. At the first opportunity I shall write to the synod, and I shall take my son, Alexei, home. We must note here that Fyodor Pavlovich knew where to look for the weak spot. There had been at one time malicious rumors which had even reached the archbishop, not only regarding our monastery, but in others where the institution of elders existed, that too much respect was paid to the elders, even to the detriment of the authority of the superior, that the elders abused the sacrament of confession and so on and so on, absurd charges which had died away of themselves everywhere. But the spirit of folly, which had caught up Fyodor Pavlovich and was bearing him on the current of his own nerves into lower and lower depths of ignominy, prompted him with this old slander. Fyodor Pavlovich did not understand a word of it, and he could not even put it sensibly, for on this occasion no one had been kneeling and confessing aloud in the elder's cell, so that he could not have seen anything of the kind. He was only speaking from confused memory of old slanders. But as soon as he had uttered his foolish tirade, he felt he had been talking absurd nonsense, and at once longed to prove to his audience, and above all to himself, that he had not been talking nonsense. And, though he knew perfectly well that with each word he would be adding more and more absurdity, he could not restrain himself, and plunged forward blindly. How disgraceful! Cried Pyotr Alexandrovich. Pardon me, said the Father Superior. It was said of old, many have begun to speak against me and have uttered evil sayings about me. And hearing it I have said to myself, it is the correction of the Lord and he has sent it to heal my vain soul. And so we humbly thank you, honored guest. And he made Fyodor Pavlovich a low bow. Tut, 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 sanctimoniousness and stock phrases. Old phrases and old gestures. The old lies and formal prostrations. We know all about them. A kiss on the lips and a dagger in the heart, as in Schiller's Robbers. I don't like falsehood, fathers, I want the truth. But the truth is not to be found in eating gudgeon and that I proclaim aloud. Father monks, why do you fast? Why do you expect reward in heaven for that? Why, for reward like that I will come and fast too. No, saintly monk, you try being virtuous in the world, do good to society, without shutting yourself up in a monastery at other people's expense, and without expecting a reward up aloft for it, you'll find that a bit harder. I can talk sense, too, Father Superior. What have they got here? He went up to the table. Old port wine, mead brewed by the Eliezieff brothers. Fie, fie, fathers. That is something beyond gudgeon. Look at the bottles the fathers have brought out, he he he. And who has provided it all? The Russian peasant, the laborer, brings here the farthing earned by his horny hand, wringing it from his family and the tax gatherer. You bleed the people, you know, holy fathers. This is too disgraceful, said Father Isaac. Father Pacey kept obstinately silent. Musov rushed from the room, and Kalganov after him. Well, Father, I will follow Pyotr Alexandrovich. I am not coming to see you again. You may beg me on your knees, I shan't come. I sent you 1,000 rubles, so you have begun to keep your eye on me. He he he. No, I'll say no more. I am taking my revenge for my youth, for all the humiliation I endured. He thumped the table with his fist in a paroxysm of simulated feeling. This monastery has played a great part in my life. It has cost me many bitter tears. You used to set my wife, the crazy one, against me. You cursed me with bell and book, you spread stories about me all over the place. Enough, fathers. This is the age of liberalism, the age of steamers and railways. Neither 1,000, nor 100 rubles, no, nor 100 farthings will you get out of me. It must be noted again that our monastery never had played any great part in his life, and he never had shed a bitter tear owing to it. But he was so carried away by his simulated emotion, that he was for one moment almost believing it himself. He was so touched he was almost weeping. But at that very instant, he felt that it was time to draw back. The Father Superior bowed his head at his malicious lie, and again spoke impressively, "It is written again. Bear circumspectly and gladly dishonor that cometh upon thee by no act of thine own. Be not confounded and hate not him who hath dishonored thee. And so will we. Tut, tut, tut. Bethinking thyself and the rest of the rigmarole. Bethink yourselves, fathers, I will go. But I will take my son, Alexei, away from here forever, on my parental authority. Ivan Fyodorovich, my most dutiful son, permit me to order you to follow me. Vonson, what have you to stay for? Come and see me now in the town. It is fun there. It is only one short verst, instead of lent oil, I will give you sucking, pig and kasher. We will have dinner with some brandy and liqueur wit. I've ploughed berry wine. Hey, Vonson, don't lose your chance. He went out, shouting and gesticulating. It was at that moment Rakitin saw him and pointed him out to Alishor. Alexei. His father shouted, from far off, catching sight of him. You come home to me today, for good, and bring your pillow and mattress, and leave no trace behind. Alishor stood rooted to the spot, watching the scene in silence. Meanwhile, Fyodor Pavlovich had got into the carriage, and Ivan was about to follow him in grim silence without even turning to say goodbye to Alishor. But at this point another almost incredible scene of grotesque buffoonery gave the finishing touch to the episode. Maximov suddenly appeared by the side of the carriage. He ran up, panting, afraid of being too late. Rakitin and Alishor saw him running. He was in such a hurry that in his impatience he put his foot on the step on which Ivan's left foot was still resting, and clutching the carriage he kept trying to jump in. I am going with you. He kept shouting, laughing a thin mirthful laugh with a look of reckless glee in his face. Take me, too. There! Cried Fyodor Pavlovich, delighted. Did I not say he was Vonson? It is Vonson himself, risen from the dead. Why, how did you tear yourself away? What did you Vonson there? And how could you get away from the dinner? You must be a brazen-faced fellow. I am that myself, But I am surprised at you, brother. Jump in, jump in. Let him pass, Ivan. It will be fun. He can lie somewhere at our feet. Will you lie at our feet, Vonson? Or perch on the box with the coachman? Skip onto the box, Vonson. But Ivan, who had by now taken his seat, without a word gave Maximov a violent punch in the breast and sent him flying. It was quite by chance he did not fall. Drive on. Ivan shouted angrily to the coachman. Why? What are you doing? What are you about?